Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
Good morning again. So, we are continuing on this journey, the Unity Way of Living. And it's actually a subtitle each week, which sometimes I forget to say, but the one for this week is Your 12 Gifts from God. And we're going to talk about this from a little different perspective than some of you may have heard it before. But you know, I want us to keep in mind that as we investigate these ideas each week, each one of us is hearing what is being shared from a very different perspective. We're hearing it according to our own space and consciousness, you know, where we are in this moment. And if you heard this, you know, over and over and over again, your perspective or your understanding of it would change over time as you begin to grasp it a little bit more. You know, even as I am presenting these ideas to you, I'm presenting them to you from where I am in consciousness. And if you probably heard me do the same talk a year from now, it would have a different perspective to it because hopefully I'm growing and expanding as time goes on. But the, you know, reality must come to is that no matter how we choose to interpret truth principles, universal laws are always the same. So our evolution, our understanding of it keeps increasing. But the law itself, the divine principles we're trying to understand always remain the same. God law does not, will not, and cannot change to meet our circumstances. And a lot of times that's what we try to do. It is we who must constantly strive to change our understanding of the natural laws of the universe and our relationship to them. So we have to bring ourselves up to the law, not trying to bring the law down to where we are. Does that make sense? Okay. So it's only when we're willing to change and expand beyond our present state of consciousness that universal law begins to make sense, begins to work harmoniously and efficiently in our lives. And so as you're studying something, you know, if it's like, wow, I can't get this, well, that's good because what is happening for you to get it, you have to do what? Break some boundaries, okay? If you're hearing it, if you hear something, say, oh, yeah, I got that, and you really got it, then it does nothing to move you to a different space in consciousness. So we always want to introduce ourselves to information that is beyond what we can really understand. You know, for us, Jesus set the standard for learning how to live in perfect union with the law of our being. Alignment becomes the focus of our lives. So it's always, how do I align myself with spirit as opposed to trying to get spirit to align itself with me? How do I align myself with these dynamic principles I'm learning as opposed to trying to whittle them down to match where I am? So we must realign and realign our mind with God mind until at least some of the principles we're learning start to make sense and actually become a natural part of our thinking. So you learn something, like when we were in the Wednesday night class? You know, and remember I read that thing from Thomas Troward and it sounded like what? It sounded like gobbledygook. All right, but if you keep reading it over and over again, eventually your mind begins to come in tune with it. So that what Troward was explaining was what does I am that I am mean from a higher perspective. It's not a matter of getting Troward to change that law to meet where I am. It's a matter of me trying to expand my mind to where Troward is, because you know Thomas Troward, his mind is just in a whole nother space and time. So that's sort of what the process is, and you want to keep working with it until it becomes natural. You know, like what you struggle with in the beginning, and then after a while, it just becomes natural to you. And you know, somebody says it to you in the beginning, a spiritual law. Jesus, you know, shares some ideas, and you go, wow. You know, I don't know if I can get with that. But if you keep working with it, all of a sudden, you can get with it. You get it? All right. So. And in this practice of realignment, we look at Jesus as our elder brother and way shower. He so aligned his mind with God mind that eventually he did not know where he left off and God began. So that's why he would use statements like, I and the Father are one. Okay? And even when you've heard me say this before, even when he said, I and the Father are one, he was not including himself, the personality Jesus, because I is God and Father is God. You get what I'm saying? So he's talking about the deeper I am himself, not me, Jesus, and the Father are one, but the I am that I am within me and God are one. Is that okay? So, you know, and then, you know, but we're like Philip. You know, Philip said, you know, I want proof. You know, you got to prove this to me. And Jesus' answer to Philip was, the proof is in your faith. You know, you have to have faith that these divine principles that you're studying are going to take you to a place you know not of, so to speak, you know, a place way beyond where you are now. You know, and have you ever said to yourself or heard somebody say, you know, I have to get inside of his head to understand how he thinks? A lot of times in sales, when salesmen are being trained, they'll do that. You know, how do you get inside the person's head so you know how they think? Well, our spiritual goal is to get inside the head of Jesus, okay? Jesus not only set a standard, but Jesus overcame the fickleness of human consciousness and the human condition to become the living expression of the Christ standard, all right? So that's what our goal is. And he didn't only just do it himself, but he did it and he was teaching. So he's like, okay, this is how it is. Now watch me. This is how it looks, all right? And so he wasn't just a teacher, but he was also a demonstration of that which he was teaching. So Jesus set the standard and the direction for each of us to follow and learn how to live from our own Christ center. Now, as followers of the Christ ideal, in order to make any progress, we must at least acknowledge the standard that Jesus Christ set as the path that we want to follow. Or we need to find and follow one of the many paths of the other great teachers who lead to enlightenment. You get what I'm saying? So you say, well, I don't really want to follow Jesus. I want to follow Buddha. Or, you know, I want to follow Krishna. But find a path. Okay? You know, so we're not saying that you have to follow the path of Jesus. We're just saying that unity follows the path of Jesus. We're not saying it's the only path. Okay? You know, if you say you want to follow the path of Buddha, well, Buddha lived 3,000 years before Jesus. And there's actually a book that I have that has the parallel sayings between Buddha and Jesus. So, you know, they were both speaking truth. And those are the only two, at least human beings in history that we know of, that both said, I am awake. And what they meant by I am awake is I am no longer trapped in the illusion of three-dimensional physicality. I understand the greater awareness that God is. That's what it means. And again, you know, when I break it down to the movie, it's the Matrix. Right? The blue pill, red pill. All right, we keep going for the pill that keeps us in the illusion. Like I love the line in there where the guy had taken the pill to wake up, and he says, man, I'm taking that pill to put me back to sleep. And I don't know if anybody remembers that one. He says, I can't deal with this out here. This, you know, I want to be back asleep. You know, and he took the pill to go back to sleep. And that's what's happening to a lot of us is we're staying on that pill that keeps us asleep. All right? When that other pill wakes us up to the reality of what is, and for many of us, that's just too hard to grasp. So, you know, I want you to get that idea in your mind that, we teach the path of Jesus here. Also realize that as I do my research, I'm researching all of the great masters, okay? And I pull it back down to, you know, the teachings of Jesus. Now, in terms of this following a path, a spiritual path that you can follow with discipline, it's written in A Course in Miracles. It is essential that you realize your thinking will be erratic until a firm commitment to a spiritual growth is made. Okay, and it goes on to say, your perceptions must be straightened out before you can really know anything. To know is to be certain, and certainty is strength. So right now, I've always said to you, we're dealing with perception. There's a chapter in the marketing book on perception, okay, because we deal with perception. And you've heard me say 1,000 times that I say to my students, there is no reality, there's only perception, okay? So the key is we've got to get beyond that. And it takes a whole different mindset to be able to do that. And it's probably why so many of us are not fully embracing the spiritual life is because we are not certain about the reality of spirit. So we lack the mental strength of certainty. we'll all say, oh, yeah, I believe in God. I believe in God. Oh, I have faith. You know, but then stuff happens, and that certainty breaks down. Okay? So, it's, you know, you've got to be able to really grasp onto something and stay with it until you begin to see the results of it in your life. I mean, raise your hand if there are things in your life that you tried and you tried and you couldn't get it, but you kept on trying until finally you got it. Right? Okay? Well, that's the same process. Okay? You got to figure out what is it that I, you know, what I have to commit myself to this process. So Jesus gave us a way of living, thinking, and believing that leads to the certainty that God is real, present, and active in our life and affairs. And he was, in the beginning of his ministry, he was trying to teach this, but people weren't getting it. So he went to miracles so that they could understand it. He says, that's why he says, my deeds are for today. The healing of the sick and all those kind of things are for today. Because the people of today, that the evolution of human consciousness has not reached a point where you can understand what I'm teaching. But he said, my words are forever. Because he knew the time would come when we would evolve to a space where we could understand what he was teaching. And we're in that place right now. We're in that space right now. You know, so, you know, the Beatitudes, you know, on the, that he gave on the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:5, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And Matthew 5:6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Now, to hunger and thirst for righteousness means right thinking, right seeing, okay? And at the end of this talk, I'm going to, how many people got the e-newsletter where I sent out how we should give us a way of responding to the violence that's been going on? Has anybody gotten that news? Okay. Well, the ones who haven't got it, I'm going to read it right after that, because that's talking about the idea of right seeing, all right, and right thinking. So, you know, he gave us those ideas, but these are probably two of the most misunderstood sayings of Jesus, because our common perception is those who demonstrate strength and power, they control the most resources. And everybody goes, oh, yeah, okay. But the key here is, you know, beyond that those physical resources, that's not the goal we're here to strive for. Our goal on a spiritual path is to discover the truth about who we are, and then, like Jesus, bring that discovery to our life and our relationships and our affairs. Now, do you want stuff? Yes, we all want stuff, right? We want, you know, we want money and housing and all the goodies that we like in life. We're not saying you won't have stuff. We're saying, but learn how to go to the source where the stuff comes from. Once you're tapped into the source, the stuff almost becomes irrelevant. I'm not really that much attached to stuff anymore. I'm not saying I'm not, though. But, you know, okay. But it's like, you know, you get to a place where I'm not really attached to the stuff anymore. But because I'm tapped into the source, it just keeps coming. You know, you heard me say about Paramahansa Yogananda when he first came to this country, was saying, well, if I'm going to share my ideas in this country, I need buildings. I need places to do it. But he was so tapped into the source that the buildings were coming at him so fast, he said, okay, I don't need any more buildings. All right, that's what it means to be tapped into the source. So that's the key. Our goal on the spiritual path is to discover who we are, and then, like Jesus, bring that discovery into our life and affairs. Now, Charles Fillmore, one of the founders of Unity, in the book 12 Powers of Man, he says, in Jesus' life and teachings is set forth the spiritual ideas of mankind on the human plane and his or her transformation into the divine. This will not happen by a miracle or the decree of God, but by the gradual refinement of the person of the flesh into the person of spirit. As Paul taught, this corruptible must put on the incorruptible, and this mortal must put on the immortal. Those taking notes, that's 1 Corinthians 15:53. So, then Fillmore explains, Jesus was the first fruits of those who are coming out of the mortal into the immortal. So he's sort of like, they call him the type man or type human. So if you say, God, how should I be? It would be like Jesus. Okay. Now, if you're following a different path, it might be like Buddha. You follow me? Okay. Depending on the path you're following. So our path is Jesus is the type man. And he is the way shower. And through his following his examples and taking on his character as a spiritually minded person, we shall come into the same consciousness. And that's what he says. All these things that I do, you what? Shall do, and greater than this shall you do. Okay? So, and in Cora Fillmore's book, Christ Enthroned, she says there is a great deal of agitation about the development of spiritual mindedness and what goes with the development. Both Jesus and John's opening statements were repent, which means change your mind. All right? And that's a whole big part of this process. She goes on to say, so all of those who are following Jesus are finding it necessary to gradually evolve out of three-dimensional physicality, meaning this world or earth, and into the transformation and into fourth-dimensional consciousness, which is a heavenly consciousness. And this transformation is what Jesus called the regeneration. So every time we operate from fear, we're going through what? Degeneration. When you turn and you can operate from love, no matter what is going on, then you're going through regeneration. And that's, you know, that's really something to think about. So when we find ourselves, you know, all the things that fall under fear, anger, resentment, jealousy, poor little old me, whatever it might be, you say, wow, I'm degenerating myself. When you can convert that thinking into thoughts of love, then you can say, I'm regenerating myself. So that's a process you want to keep in your mind. You just want to be conscious of what you're doing. And just remember, self-observation, say it out loud, without condemnation, okay? You can say, I need to degenerate right now, right? Just excuse me for a minute while I go through this. Right? And if you need to go through it, you need to go through it, right? All right, so, and in a revealing word, it explains regeneration as a change in which abundant spiritual life, even eternal life, is incorporated into the body. It is a transformation that takes place when we bring all the forces of our mind, body, spirit to the support of the Christ ideal. It's the unification of spirit, soul, mind, and body into complete spiritual oneness. See, right now, we are not in oneness. We are fragmented. We are incongruent. All right? We say one thing and we mean another. We think one thing and say something different. You're right. We are incongruent. There's not congruency in our spirit, mind, soul, and body. Is that making sense? Okay. So the idea is have to bring about that congruency. That is not, say it, easy. But at least if you know that's the path that you are on and you're conscious of the path, you can make adjustments as you realize what you're doing. Does that make sense? All right, it's like the whole thing, you know, Gurdjieff and Uspensky, if you don't know you're asleep, you don't try to wake up. But at least if you're in a state of awakening, you can begin to realize the things you're doing that are creating the challenges in your life. So how do we accomplish this process of focusing all of the forces of our spirit, soul, mind, and body supporting the Christ ideal? Well, we have been given a gift. Actually, we've been given 12 spiritual gifts from God. These 12 spiritual gifts are enthroned within the subconscious realm of mind. So in essence, we are 12-fold beings. And I'm going to explain that a little bit more further. This means from a spiritual perspective, there are 12 spiritual aspects of our consciousness we can access and awaken to guide us through life's circumstances, all right? So you're not out there by yourself. So, you know, stuff is happening, and there are 12 aspects there that you can call on, whichever one you need in the moment, to help you to move through whatever it is you're challenged with. So our spiritual quest is to understand how to activate and utilize each of our 12-fold nature. And yes, this does sound like a challenge, okay? It is so much of a challenge that Charles Fillmore says, and listen carefully, that the study of the 12 powers is not for beginners. But that's no problem, because you guys are not beginners. You get what I'm saying? You've got an advanced consciousness in the study of metaphysics. If you can reach, pat yourself on the back. All right? Okay? So you're not for beginners. You understand, you have the ability to understand this process. So let's get into this study. So the 12 powers is an explanation into the relationship between Jesus and his disciples using metaphysical interpretation to gain an understanding of how the mystical meaning of each disciple and the purpose that they stand for played a part in Jesus' life. So we find all 12 disciples mentioned in, for note takers, Matthew 10, 1 through 4. The names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip, and Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, and Simon, the Canaan, and Judas Iscariot. Okay, those are the 12. Now, each disciple represents a spiritual power center planted within the subconscious realm of mind. For beginners and newcomers, unity, I want to give you a brief explanation of each power, the corresponding disciple, and then this was, you may not have heard before, the idea behind each power. Okay. Now, for those of you who have been studying for a while, this should give you a greater understanding of how these powers work within us. So, Peter, we all know he represents what? Faith. He represents the power of faith. Okay, not just faith, but the power of faith, which is the perceiving idea in mind. Okay, so the ability to perceive possibilities greater than the ones that you thought you knew, outside of the realm of your thinking. Okay, so that's perceiving power. John represents the power of love, which is the unifying idea of mind. So love is, you know, lack of love destroys, separates. Love unifies and brings together, okay? So the unified idea in James represents the power of wisdom, which is the discriminating idea of mind, the ability to discriminate between right and wrong. And that's interesting because a lot of times we can't tell the difference between right and wrong, okay? Then that was James. And then Andrew represents the power of strength, which is the endurance idea of mind, the ability to stick with the path, the spiritual path you're on. Philip represents the power of power, which is the accomplishing or achieving idea of mind. Bartholomew represents the power of imagination, which is a creative picturing idea of mind. Thomas represents the power of understanding, which is the meaningful knowing idea of mind. And Matthew represents the power of will, which is the tendency to act idea of mind. So the power of will, like, can I do this? How many times have you had in your mind, can I do this? Can I make this happen? Well, you need to call on Matthew, the power of will, which is the tendency to act idea of mind. Okay? And then James represents the power of order, which is the sequencing of right progression idea of mind. Everything is in what? Divine order. So when you think things are not in divine order, you need to call on the power of order to help you recognize that it is in divine order. Things happen and we go, oh man, I wish that didn't happen. But if you really pay attention, maybe in your life you needed that to happen. That makes sense? Okay, so that's the process there. So, and Simon represents the power of zeal, which is the impulse to go forward idea in mind. When you feel like you're procrastinating, you need Simon, the power of zeal, to get you to move forward. Thaddeus represents the power of renunciation or elimination, which is a cleansing, purifying idea of mind. And Judas represents the power of life, which is the inspiration, energy, and potency power idea of mind. Okay, so each one of those has a direct relationship to something that's occurring in your life. Now, by giving the spiritual idea of mind behind the spiritual gift, it gives us a sense that there's always a spiritual action standing in the wings of our consciousness, waiting for us to embrace and employ it into action when and where it's needed. So stuff happens, you say to yourself, I got an idea of mind, a power, waiting to jump into action. Okay, and that takes your mind off of worrying or being upset or fearful about what you think is going to happen. You get what I'm saying? Because you're tapped into the fact, no, I've got 12 spiritual gifts. One of them or a couple of them are going to jump into action. We were born programmed at the factory with 12 spiritual gifts, ideas, each one designed to counteract any and every negative idea or experience we may conjure up or come into. You came here with it, all right? Now, for example, the corresponding divine idea to the negative notion, you hurt me, so I need to hurt you back, is the divine idea of cleansing and purification found in the power of renunciation and elimination. This idea allows you to choose to cleanse yourself of the negative belief that you've been hurt. The power of renunciation gives you the strength and the courage to renounce, surrender, and give up the negative belief that you've been hurt. It gives you the power to know and give up you've been hurt. Now, our personality, our persona, our ego wants to hold on to the fact that I am hurt and you hurt me. Oh, you want to hear? Let me tell you about how that person hurt me. Right? We want to wallow in it. Now, it's justified. The thing I'm going to read to you after this, it's natural and it's justified. Nobody's knocking any of us for feeling hurt by something that happened in our lives or by somebody. But is that the path you want to be on? Or do you want to choose a different path? Okay. And as we talked about last week, these negative ideas in the consciousness of humankind began in the allegory of the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. It was the birth and perpetuation of this negative idea that got us thrown out of the Garden of Eden, allegorically speaking. And you know that's an allegory, all right? It's recorded in Genesis 3:23. The Lord God sent him out of the Garden of Eden to till the ground from which he was taken. So he drove the man out of the garden. Now, however, the Creator, in God's infinite love, did not send us out without giving us 12 very special gifts, 12 keys that we could use to unlock and rediscover our divine potential. Do you get what I'm saying? So yes, we were put out here, okay? But he says, you've got these 12 gifts that you can use to move you through anything that happens in your life, all right? It's recorded in Matthew 4:18-22, that when Jesus began his ministry, he obviously felt he needed faith. So he called first Peter, and strength, Andrew, and also immediately called love, John, and wisdom, James. So he's getting ready to go into his ministry. He says, these are the things I need. I need you guys to come with me and be that for me as I evolve in consciousness to awaken it within myself. And it's important to note that he called them first and he called them together, which tells us something about Jesus recognizing himself that he needed this to get through what he was going through so he could what? Be about his Father's business. He said, without this help, I can't be about my Father's business. So same thing as with each one of us. We too must decide which disciple we need to call into service. We already have written within us the spiritual powers we need to change the notion of fear into the idea of faith, the notion of hurt into the idea of love, the notion of confusion into the idea of wisdom, the notion of weakness into the idea of strength, the notion of feeling powerless into the idea of feeling powerful. We have that within us already. We have the spiritual power within us to imagine the good we want in our lives and to bring that good about. We have the spiritual power to understand how to be peaceful, loving, compassionate, gentle, understanding. We have the spiritual power to know God's will for us and how to implement that will in our lives. And we have the spiritual power to bring order into disorder, to move forward and attain the good we want in our lives with zeal and enthusiasm. And we have the power to cleanse, purify ourselves of all ideas that have nothing to do with glorifying God. And last but definitely not least, we have the power to bring new life into our bodies and minds, thus healing ourselves of all hurt and pain. So there they are, your 12 spiritual gifts from God. And this week, when you feel something unholy rising up inside of you, stop and take a deep breath and think to yourself, which disciple do I need to awaken and help me to get through this ugliness that's rising up inside of me? You don't even need to know, you don't have to know the disciples by name. All right? You don't have to know them by name. You don't have to know which power they represent. Just the fact that you are open and receptive will make room for the right power to awaken within you. They don't need you to tell them which one you're calling for. They're not sitting back there drinking Starbucks coffee waiting until you call on them. They're right involved in your life. And so when a situation comes up, just be open and receptive. The power will say, this is, you need me right now. And that, I mean, just to know that is powerful, okay? So give it a try and watch all the negative, challenging situations in your life change. Watch your life change for the glory of God, all right? Now, what I want to do now is I woke up, you know, we've had some tragedies happening, you know, in our country. And I woke up one morning this past week, was out doing my 5-mile walk, which I do early in the morning. It's still dark. It's quiet. There's a couple of us out there. You know, we pass each other. Hey, we're out here again. We don't know what each other look like because it's pitch dark, right? But and this thought came to me as our response to the tragedy we've been hearing in our country. And this title actually comes from something that came from something our president at Prince George Community College wrote. Yet again, we mourn. All right, but this is what the thoughts that came to me. Those of us who call ourselves true students have a mighty work in front of us. As we live in a time of great spiritual challenge, it is a time of mourning and grief for the senseless loss of life and compassionate love and support for those who lost loved ones. In actuality, when anyone's life is taken through violence, it is all of us who feel as if we have lost a loved one, whether we knew the person or not. Violence of any sort is an attack on all of us, so we all mourn and feel heartbroken. However, it is the work of a true student to muster the strength and the courage to keep the high watch by holding a vision of the love and compassion that could become the norm between all human beings when we each to discover the divine presence that lies deep within our soul. And yes, we do need to take time to mourn and feel deep sorrow that comes up within us when violence and tragedy strikes. But then we need to remember that our divine mission is as truth students, that we need to hold the vision of the healing and wholeness that comes from our hearts and then send that loving expression to the people and places that need it. It's easy to be angry and upset. Actually, it is natural and justifiable to be angry and upset. But these emotions do not heal. They do not lift up. They actually throw us into the mindset of the perpetrators of violence. And in that mindset, we cannot be healers. In Greg Braden's book, The Isaiah Effect, he explains a scientific experiment that proved that if the square root of the population prayed for peace, love, and compassion, it would impact the whole population. It is our work to be part of the square root. It is our work to keep the high watch. It is our work to be healers. As my friend Big Day would say, it ain't easy being us, but this is the path we have chosen. So we need to be about our work. Amen.